Happy Mother's Day, and welcome to East Lake Church. Glad you're here. So there was this huge convention that all these women were at. There was hundreds of them. And they had these breakout sessions where they'd have like maybe 35 or 40 women in these workshops. And this one woman is leading the workshop, and she says to about 40 other women, she says, how many of you have ever felt like you wanted to mother your husband? So it's quiet, and then all of a sudden, one lady in the back just starts waving her hand like this, and the woman looks at her and says, ma'am, you've wanted to mother your husband? And she's waving her hand, she goes, oh, sorry, I thought you said smother. So moms, welcome, good to have you here. We're in this series called Recover, and a huge part of life is learning how to recover, because all of us make so many mistakes, and people make mistakes with us. And if you can't learn to recover, it will cause your passion to stay devoted to your desires to wane. And one thing about desires, it takes a tremendous amount of devotion to have your desires. We blaze the trail towards our desires with devotion. And so recovery from mistakes is a huge part of it. And we're going to look, in fact, look in your notes. The big idea this weekend is you can have a devoted heart. And we're going to look at this amazing woman, this mom, and what she can teach us about recovery. So let's read that. I'll read you the story right now. Then Jesus left Galilee and went north to the region of Tyre and Sidon. A Gentile woman who lived there came to him pleading, have mercy on me, O Lord, Son of David, for my daughter is possessed by a demon that torments her severely. But Jesus gave her no reply, not even a word. Then his disciples urged him to send her away. Well, tell her to go away, they said. She's bothering us with all her begging. Then Jesus said to the woman, I was sent to help God's lost sheep, the people of Israel. But she came and worshipped him, pleading again, Lord, help me. Jesus responded, it isn't right to take the food from the children and throw it to the dogs. She replied, that's true, Lord. But even the dogs are allowed to eat the scraps that fall beneath the master's table. Dear woman, Jesus said to her, your faith is great. Your request has been granted. And your daughter, and her daughter was instantly healed. And Jesus is up north in Tyre and Sidon. And these are two cities that are right on the border of this Jewish nation. And in that day, most of the people were all one religion. They were almost all part of one church. And Tyre and Sidon were just on the border of that. They were just on the edge of it. And so they'd had a lot of chances to look at the church of the day. And they had decided they didn't want any part of it. And so they're way north, and they're just on the border, though. And they had seen the church. This whole nation basically is a part of one church, the Jewish nation. And they had seen it, and they decided they didn't want any part of it. To them, the church represented a lot of hard work. I mean, you had to work really, really super hard to be okay with God. And then, if, you know, any mistake happens, and you had to work really, really hard again. And so they didn't want any part of it at all. And then so when Jesus shows up, I'm sure they were a little bit skeptical because he's Jewish, and they see him as a part of this church. And yet they notice right away that there's something different about him. That he's talking about a faith that's based on something different than works. And this woman, she decides to approach him with this huge problem that she's having in her family. There was something about Jesus. She had lots of opportunities to join the religion, many opportunities to approach other religious leaders, but she hadn't, probably because she just felt like, man, I'll just be told to work harder. But something in Jesus seems different, so she approaches him with this huge, huge family problem, and she thinks something's different is going to happen. So let's see what it is. Number one, right? Mercy. The first words out of her mouth is, have mercy on me. And mercy is something that you ask for that you know you don't deserve. When I was in high school, one of my best friends was the vice principal. And more than one time I had to approach him and ask for mercy because I'd done something wrong and I knew I didn't deserve, and I'd ask him for mercy. And there's a story about Napoleon where he learned about mercy. the Emperor Napoleon, one of the young soldiers in his army had got in the thick of the battle and had, you know, left his post and gone AWOL. And Napoleon decides to make an example of this young soldier, and so he sentences him to be executed. And the day before this soldier is to be executed, and the word has gone all around because he's trying to teach everybody something. You know, you don't run during battle or you'll be executed. So, you know, everybody's aware of it. Everybody's watching to see what's going to happen. And this mother shows up the day before and asks if she can see the emperor, which, like, you know, fat chance, no way you're going to see the emperor. And he says, no. And, you know, she stands beneath the window of his office all day long and just looks up. And several times, as the story goes, he goes over and looks down at her, and she's not budging. Well, she's just looking up at his window. So finally, he sends one of his, you know, assistants to go get her, and he's just curious, like, what? Because, you know, he knew it was the mom. And she comes up, and she enters the room, and she says, "My lord, I've come to ask mercy for my son." And Napoleon replied, "Madame, your son doesn't deserve mercy." And she said, "My lord, if he did, it wouldn't be called mercy." And in the story, it does something to him. And he releases the son to his care of his mother. Because a faith based on mercy is entirely different than a faith based on works. And the first thing she says to Jesus is have mercy on me. And the Bible says that she's pleading, which is very different than begging. The disciples see her and they think that she's begging, but begging is distinguished from pleading, because begging is always about me, but pleading is about someone else. So when I'm begging, it really is about what I have to have. I'm begging because I need something. But pleading is on the behalf of someone else. And she's pleading to stay devoted to her daughter. She's saying, "Jesus, I need mercy to stay devoted to my daughter." And one thing about your kids, they will turn you to God. You know, they can take you there. This woman was at one of the big Costco's or Sam's or something. She just got a tribe around her. I mean, all these kids, little monkeys climbing all over everything. She's trying to get through. And this lady's behind her. And finally, she laughs. She goes, "Well, you got a lot of kids." She goes, would you have that many kids again? And the lady says, "Oh, yeah, but not the same ones." Wouldn't want these ones. But the truth is, we all want to stay devoted to our children. And regardless of what they put us through. And she's really going through a hard thing. She's saying that her daughter is being attacked by a demon. Now, I don't know if you believe in that kind of stuff or not, but the Bible presents it as true. And so this woman, you know, really what she's facing is there's something completely unseen that she can't control. Which is probably more the point of this story, is that, and especially for the moms, there'll always be things that'll be happening in your family that you can't control. And sometimes you won't even be able to see them or understand them or know where they're coming from. You won't be able to even begin to put your finger on it, but you'll have to live in the effects of it. And that's this woman. She says, "I know there's something going on here, and I can't control it." And I wonder how long she'd been waiting to be honest with someone about what was happening in her family. I don't know if there was any secrets in your family that the family just knew, and you had to be one of the guardians of the family secret. I was talking to this dude at work this last week, and he was telling me he came from a really very devoted religious family, and I guess this whole neighborhood was a really religious family, but he wasn't. And so in high school, he started smoking pot, and nobody knew about it. And he got a job at this video store, and he's out at his break time smoking pot like a knucklehead, and the manager walks out, totally catches him, and calls his mom, fires him on the spot, and calls his mom. "You know, we fired your son today because we caught him smoking pot during his break." You know, and he told me, he said when he went home, he walked in the front door and he said his mother flew at him in a rage. and literally started beating him, like attacking him. I mean, she said it was so bad. He said his little brother was crying and like pleading with the mom to stop. And he just tried to protect himself. He didn't fight her, and she's just beating him. And the crux of it was that the neighborhood was going to find out. I mean, because they had like a certain image in their neighborhood, you know, and it didn't include my son gets fired for smoking pot. And it so angered her that she was beating him. Now, as I was listening to him talk, and I don't know if you've ever been in one of those settings where, you know, 1 minute you're sort of talking about the weather and then the next minute you're not. It's like we were just kind of walking around, you know, and I'd met his mom, and I said, "Hey, what was it like growing up?" And you know, we're just sort of talking, and then, I mean, he just went there, and of course, the best thing to do at that point is try not to be shocked, like, "Wow, really? Whoa!" You know, just be quiet and let him talk. And I was wondering, I thought, "Gosh, I wonder if he's ever got to say that to anybody before." You know, I wonder. It is true that it's more destructive to conceal a secret than it is to confess it. And it doesn't seem like that, you know, does it? It seems like, man, I can't let anybody know this. I can't tell you how many times I lied to have my friends not come to my house because I knew my mom was already drunk. I didn't want anybody to see that. I didn't want it to get around school. And so I would have to run, like back in the day when you had a telephone in your house, I would run to the telephone and grab it if it rang because I didn't want my mom to pick it up because what if it was one of my friends? There's a lot of different ways you guard the secret. But when you start to let the secret out, and there must be something about Jesus because she tells him this big, huge secret and she tells him in front of other people. Which I have learned that principle that once I have told Jesus a secret, it does seem easier to tell it to other people. In fact, one of the best places to begin is with him, to make any kind of confession. Talk to him first and see how it feels, and then you'll find out you can tell other people. And that's what happens here. This woman tells this huge secret. She says, "I think there's something like really evil going on with my daughter," which must have been hard to say. Now, as you watch your children grow up and do crazy things, it's going to be very normal sometimes to go, "Oh, man, you know, did they get that from me or him?" You know, what was it like for her to have to process through, where did she get this evil, where did this evil come from? And it would be very normal for her to start with, well, maybe she got it from me. When you're connected to someone at a micro level, it's very easy to take the blame for how they behave and how they show up in life. So she's processing. I mean, she's like, this is raw evil, and she tells Jesus about it, and she's finally honest. And you can write in your notes, "I can be honest." When you're in an environment of mercy, when it's not faith by works, but it's faith by mercy, when you begin with understanding, I'm asking for something I don't deserve. Which mercy is far different than entitlement. It's just the opposite. And when you feel entitled to something, you believe that you're owed something because of your performance. So when you feel entitled, and you can feel entitled for lots of different reasons. You can feel entitled because of the family that you're part of. You can feel like you're entitled because of the religion you're part of. You can feel like, "I worked really, really, really super hard at this job," or "I worked really, really hard at church. And now, you know, it's like, they owe me. I deserve this." And she doesn't show up that way at all. She doesn't, it's not faith by works. She shows up and says, "I know I don't deserve anything from you." And he's really honest. And it's because she's so honest, it's surprising how Jesus treats her. In the story, the Bible says he doesn't say a word to her. Now, at first, that may seem a little callous, but probably what's happening is he's just still listening. I don't know if you've ever sort of put your heart out there with someone and then they gave you a 3-point plan on how to correct everything and fix it right now. You know, and you listen and nod your head, but you walk away and go, "I'm never telling them anything again." And so really, it maybe was a really compassionate thing at first to do, was to just not say anything. Although, when God is silent, it is difficult. We don't normally think he's being compassionate towards us or merciful when he doesn't talk. We usually think, come on already, I'd say something. But he's not. He's definitely creating some space here. And the disciples, they think because Jesus isn't saying anything that he's not going to do anything. And I don't know if you've ever been there where you feel like, you know, I don't feel like God's saying anything at all. And so it's very easy to go the next step and go, and he's probably not going to do anything either. And the disciples, they're watching him and they're saying, he's not going to do anything. And so they butt into the conversation. That's always great when now they butt in, you know, and send her away. She's not even a part of our religion anyways. Why would we help her? Send her away. She's bothering us. Now, Jesus doesn't say anything to them either. So you know, I'm thinking the woman must have been encouraged by that. And they smart off from the sidelines, and Jesus doesn't even acknowledge them, and they're his friends. And she's probably thinking, yeah, shut up, you know. And nothing is said. And then he starts talking to her about timing. He starts to talk to her about that God has a plan and a timing, and there's an order to things. There's an agenda to things. And oftentimes when God is not speaking, it's to just sort of let things dissipate enough so that when he does say something, I can hear it. Because that's not what she wants to hear. She does not want to hear God say no. It's not the right time. That's hard. And I'm sure that Jesus didn't want to say it. You know, I don't know if you've ever, like, have you ever been with anybody and they had to tell you something that you didn't want to hear, and you just knew that they didn't want to have to tell you. When I was 16, I was trying to get this job at this place, and I went in and I talked to the manager, and I was like, really, really want this job. And then he had to tell me about halfway through, he's like, son, I am so sorry, but you have to be 18 to work here. And I was just deflated in my small little town. I wanted that job. But what I noticed was, it was really hard for him to tell me. Somehow he caught that, I really wanted this to work here. It was really hard for him to say, I'm sorry, but this is the way it is. And do you ever think God hurts because he has to tell you no? I mean, in religion, it's just right and wrong. You know, there's no personalness to God. But this is, Jesus has to tell this woman no. Like, my daughter really needs you, Lord. And he says, no. And when you wonder how Jesus makes his decisions, I mean, how does he heal this person and not heal that person? In John 5:19, John's take on the whole thing, one time that, you know, Jesus said, I only do what I see my Father doing. I'm just like you. I have to follow God. And so sometimes, you know, there's situations my heart goes out to and God tells me no. And so I have to tell someone no. He decides as he goes. He watches God and decides. And in this situation, the woman comes and says, can you do something about my family, my daughter? This is a mom now. You know, very devoted. And can you do something about my daughter? And Jesus checks in with God and God says, no. You do not have the green light to do anything. How do you do when God says no? I mean, if he is the living God, he is going to show up alive, and he is, you know, and can he say no? And here's where the story really gets strange. Jesus tells her no, and the Bible says she worships him. Now, when's the last time you really, 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 really needed something from God, and he told you no, and it caused you to start singing songs to him and worshiping him? And I don't know how she knows this, but I do know that when I am struggling with God, one of the best things to do is to worship him. I mean, you'll get settled pretty clearly because you'll come back to the idea that I'm not just worshiping you in life because of all the things you do. I'm worshiping you because of who you are. and she starts to worship him. And, you know, when we sing songs in here, the, you know, the guys practice and they get ready and they sing songs. You know, we all know this. It isn't the pregame. You know, it's not like the warm-up time, you know, like the cartoons that, or the trailers that come on at the movies. You know, you just sort of eat your popcorn and watch, and then, but the big movie comes on. No, when we come here and we sing those songs, it's worship to the Lord. He's listening. He likes your voice. Maybe no one else does, but he does. He likes your voice. He likes to hear you sing. And I want to encourage you to press yourself. Learn how to worship. Download songs off the internet and learn how to talk to God when you're driving and when you're at work, and take walks with him and tell him what you think about him and worship him. When you come on Sunday mornings, come ready to sing. The lyrics are up there. The guys are doing their thing. Like, step into it and sing a little bit. Push yourself, especially the dudes. That's where they're really troubled. It's like, way too cool to sing a song. Really, you're not that cool. And if you could step into worship, there's a lot of clarity that you'll get in life when you worship. And she gets really clear as she worships him. She's very honest with Jesus, and get this, Jesus is very honest with her. Now, being with God is a two-way street. Well, I got to a place where I'm really, really honest with Jesus. Okay, and another question is, can he be honest with you? So she's really honest, and he's honest right back, knows the answer. And she starts to worship, and she decides, well, I'm going to be honest. I'm going to be honest back to you, Jesus. That's not good enough. I still need help. And that's what worship can do. You tell me no, God. I worship here a while. I come back and say, no, go back and get a different answer. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't like your answer, God. And turn your outline over where it says number two is faith. You can write in, I can be persistent. I mean, she tells him, exclamation point, help me. Exclamation point, help me. And and Jesus, he really now decides, I've got to, you know, I have to help this woman see the timing, and God has a plan. And so he tells her this story. He says, listen, lady, let's say you're at your house tonight. And everybody's at the dinner table, and you're having a big, nice dinner, and one of your kids gets up and starts walking around the table and scraping everybody's food into the dog's dish. And you're like, hey, what are you doing? And she's like, I want the doggy to have something to eat. And you're like, well, wait a second. It's not the dog's turn. And she... I mean, think about it. You know, the dog doesn't pay the bills. And the dog doesn't do the laundry. And the dog doesn't, you know, clean the yard. The dog craps in the yard, doesn't clean the yard. You know, you can tell I have a dog. But it's hard. I mean, what Jesus is saying is that there's an order to things. There's a way things are. And it's not that I don't love the dog. It's that we just don't stop dinner and give our food to the dog. The dog's turn comes after we've eaten. And he's trying to explain this to this lady, and right in the middle of the explanation, he's, you know, and it's he risks being misunderstood, by the way. I mean, you know, you could think this lady might be thinking, Lord, are you saying I'm a dog? And he's like, trying to get her to understand do you know what? Just because Jesus can't give us our way, it doesn't mean he doesn't care. I mean, he's risking being misunderstood. I'm sure the crowd is going, whew, she should have stopped while she was ahead. Now he's talking about dogs. And just because he can't do what you want, it doesn't mean he doesn't care about what you want. Every pain you go through, every hurt, every disappointment, everything that frustrates you, Jesus cares about all of those. Just like a good parent would like tell their children, we care about the dog, honey. That's not the point. We of course we care about the dog. You know, something's going to happen for that. We care about the dog. It's just not right to feed the dog right now. And maybe you have something going on in your life and you're waiting. You're like, gosh, come on, God already. Come on, come on. Maybe he's been quiet. He's giving you some time. Or maybe Maybe he has said something you totally don't want to hear. And it'd be very natural for you to say, he doesn't care. And so he really does kind of use a cool story, especially if you've ever had a pet. Or especially if you've ever made a mistake thinking you were loving. My grandfather killed the family bird. My grandmother had a cockatiel that she just loved, this bird. And we all liked the bird, but my grandfather definitely loved the bird the most, it seemed like. He'd walk around the whole day with this bird on his retired, you know, a bird. And he loved to cook, and so at night, you know, a lot of times he'd be in the kitchen, and this, you know, he'd have this bird, like, right on him, you know. And little trails of bird stuff down his T-shirt, which was pretty gross. But anyways, he'd have this bird. My grandmother told him so many times, you know, the vet said, don't feed that bird any food. It has a gizzard. It can't digest it. And only bird seed for the bird. One night, you know, he's making this big lamb dish, and I saw him. He was singing to the bird and talking, and, you know, he's got a glass of wine, and you know, he's cutting off little pieces of this lamb, and he's giving it to, shh, don't tell your mother, you know. He's feeding the bird. And then I saw him, I watched him at the table. The bird was walking around the table, and now he's giving little piles of, you know. We woke up in the morning, and down at the bottom of the cage was the bird, dead. And my grandmother hit the ceiling. She's like, I told you not to feed the, you know, you can't feed the bird that kind of stuff. Now here's the point. God's not like that. He's not going to love you at a depth that's going to kill you. He has the discipline to withhold, even though it'd make him feel so good to say yes. Can you imagine the discipline it took to go to the cross? It says in the book of Ephesians chapter 1 that before the creation of the world, there was the cross. Here's what that means. Jesus didn't find out about the cross when he came to earth. For anything that we call time and existence, he knew the entire, he has always known he was going to the cross. Can you imagine the discipline it took through eons and eons and eons to stay committed and disciplined? Yes, I'm still going to go. That's what he's trying to say to the woman. He's saying, God is so loving that he'll go through the pain, the personal pain, he'll go through the pain to tell you no. And just as he's doing it, he's explaining this whole thing to him. People in the crowd are probably thinking, what in the world? Just as he's doing it, it appears that God changes his mind because of something this woman says. She starts talking about, like, scraps. And here's the mom part of the day. Isn't it, moms have an amazing ability to scrap things together for their families. I mean, I know, my wife has been and you every, you know, you feel this way about your wife. My wife, you know, she's the greatest mom. But I have watched her so many times, you know, scrape things together in one way or another for my sons, my children. And this is a mother. She's coming to the Lord. She's devoted. And when he says, she's like, but Lord, if you just gave me one scrap. I mean, she understands scraping things together. All moms do. I mean, but she finally gets to the place where she cannot scrape it together anymore. And something about that must have, so something changed with God. When she finally says in her own way, she says, but God, I can't scrape anything together anymore. I don't even know where this thing comes from that's got a hold of my daughter. I don't know what to do about it. I don't know what's going to happen. I look down the road. It scares the hell out of me what's going to happen to her. I mean, and I don't even know. Normally I've got something I can do. There's like some plan I can put together. There's something I can do. God, I got nothing. And when you're a mom, there will be times in your life where you'll hit that. Where you don't even have a scrap to work with. You can't scrape anything together for your kids. And that's this woman. She had nothing. And that's when she got the green light. And it is hard to admit that. Because all moms are wired to never, 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 never give up, especially on their kids. And she finally comes to the place where she says, Jesus, if you could give me just a scrap, because it's from you, it'd make all the difference. Just a scrap would make all the difference. And Jesus says to her, dear woman, which you might, if you're a mom here today, you may need to hear that, dear woman. That's all he says is, dear woman. If you could hear that, for all the times, all the moms, all the things you've done that it seemed like, nobody noticed, all the sacrifices you made that it seems like, nobody cared, all the times you did the laundry and, all the times that you gave rides and all the long nights of homework and all the confusion and all the smiles at your kids, total screw-ups and everything that moms do, the Susie Homemaker, I have to be Susie Homemaker and then I have to be the best employee ever and then I have to come home and I have to be a Victoria's Secret supermodel for my husband at night and then I get up in the morning and I do it all again. And Jesus says, dear woman, and I hope you can hear that from us today, but more importantly from him. I hope, if you're a mom today, I hope you can hear Jesus say, dear woman, and it's almost like that's what she might have needed to hear the most. She's been wrestling with alligators, and when it's all said and done, he says, dear woman, and it seems like everything in the story gets very, very peaceful, because then he says that her daughter's healing happens instantly, but it's almost like it just sort of gets tacked on. I mean, and hear this, there are going to be times in your life, moms, when you feel like if something doesn't happen for you with your family, your world is over. Now she arrives and she's like, Jesus, you don't understand. If you don't do something for my daughter, and then when he does it, it's almost like she doesn't catch it. Because something had happened for her in her encounter with Jesus that became larger than what she needed. And when she gets what she needs, it's like, oh, that's right. Sorry, I was still back on the dear woman part. And you can write in your news, it's good news, Jesus is devoted to healing. Your request is granted, your daughter has been instantly healed. And okay, so if you're a mom today, think about the story. I mean, her daughter was instantly healed, but she's the mother and she wasn't instantly healed. I mean, she has to go through a process, man. She's writing this thing out and now she talks to Jesus and he takes her all over the map. It's like, no, my answer is no. And she's like, well, wait a second. And she, okay, well, I'm going to worship you anyways. And then she's like, well, wait a minute. No's not good enough. And then he says, starts telling her a story about a dog. And I'm sure she's like, are you calling me a dog? And then finally she starts to understand it. Oh, I see. And then he says, okay. And that's the process. Now, religion will never give you that. But mercy will. If you have a faith that's based on mercy, you won't have any entitlement. There will be none. You'll understand, you'll always be before God saying, I don't deserve anything, but I'm still asking.